Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. During this hour, I'll be bringing on Dr. Gerald Pollack, who, in my opinion, is one of the world's most famous water scientists. He's discovered a fourth phase of what he calls the fourth phase of water, or easy water. In addition to having water as mist, as vapor, for example, or as solid, like water, or as frozen as ice, he says there's actually an easy water, which is a fourth phase of water, which can be used for people's health and make people feel a lot much better. So he's a fascinating fellow. He's a professor at the University of Washington. He's actually written a book called The Fourth Phase of Water, Beyond Solid, Liquid, and Vapor. He also has a wonderful institute called the Institute for Venture Science, where he's now implementing and funding exciting new scientific ideas and discoveries. He received his PhD in biomedical engineering from the University of Pennsylvania in 1968. He then joined the faculty of the University of Washington and has been involved in some amazing groundbreaking research since then. And we'll bring on Jerry, Professor Pollack now. Jerry, are you there?
I am there, absolutely, Ted. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure, Jerry. It's so good to have you. And I don't know if you remember Michiko Hayashi, but she's on the phone, too.
Hi, Michiko. Yes, I
Hi,
think
Jerry.
I do remember her.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I think I do,
good.
Too. Hi,
good.
Jerry. How
good.
Are you?
Good.
Great. Great, and my blessings to all the way over to Tokyo.
Oh, thank you. Same to you, all the way to Seattle.
Right.
Great. And then I also have a wonderful gentleman named Leon McLaughlin. He is the head of something called Clean Water Foundation of Washington. He's just going to be silent listening to you in the background. But I've said so many good things about you today that he said, well, I want to stay on and listen to Professor Pollack. So yeah, and I'll make a disclaimer. Jerry, Professor Pollack did not pay me anything to say these things about him. So anyway.
Maybe it's time I did.
Yeah, well, we do accept donations. But anyway, Leon, please meet Professor Pollack.
Thank you so very much, and I'm so happy to be a part of the show and listening to you. It's going to be very interesting. I'm
well,
excited.
I hope so. Thank you for coming on, and thank you for your confidence. I appreciate that.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yes, indeed.
And we also have Martha Childress of the Natural Choice Network here. She has a radio show as well, and she's a wonderful lady. And Martha, say hi to Professor Pollack.
Hi, how are you doing? We're just happy to sit back and listen to you, too.
Okay, well, thank you, Martha. Good to be with you, too.
Jerry, if you don't mind, I'll share your funny email you sent me earlier today. You said you could speak on two different topics. One was how birds fly, and a second fascinating topic was easy water and health. And, you know, I've often looked at birds and wondered how they fly, but I think most people would like to know about easy water and health. So, but you're welcome.
Well, another time we'll speak about bird flying, because I think the mechanism is quite different from what everybody thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Other principles are involved, because just 30 seconds worth on the birds, because, you know, if someone asks you, let's say your grandson or something, or granddaughter, hey, Grandpa, how do birds fly? And, of course, you'll say, well, they flap their wings. The problem is that there are some birds that don't flap their wings, or they don't often flap their wings, and they fly just fine. And so this is a conundrum that needs a response. You know, how do they do it? And I won't go any further than that, except to say that next book is dealing, a few chapters are dealing with that. And I really do believe that the answer is actually rather different from what we all think. That's all.
Okay, fascinating.
So we move on to water.
Do birds actually buy plane tickets? You told me that earlier. Is that a different answer?
Interesting. It depends what they do, because, you know, if they're outside and they help the plane fly, saving fuel, then they get paid for it.
Well, that's
otherwise, they have to pay.
Wow, I hadn't realized that. That's a first, a world first. We just heard it here on the show about what birds really do. Well, I talked about your Institute for Venture Science, Jerry, and what's your website there if people wanted to check it out or perhaps make a donation to your...
Institute for Venture Science, ivscience.org.
Okay, ivscience.org. Wonderful.
Very simple, ivscience.org.
.org.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. We've got some exciting projects that challenge mainstream thinking in major ways, and these have been thoroughly vetted. I would say more than any other science organization I know. You know, every application gets reviewed, but we do the review in spades, and so we're quite sure that the ones that we selected, despite their unorthodox nature, are really promising ones that can change the world. And we're looking for private funding to take in and transfer to these exciting, potentially world-shaking projects.
Wow, that's fantastic. And one of the things, I just want to mention this briefly. We talked a few months ago or last year, Jerry, about how science seems to be stuck in a rut here, especially in North America, where they're so afraid to step out of their paradigms, out of their what they've been trained as PhDs in, to look into new ideas. And I think that's why your work at your institute is so important.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, Ted. You know, it's really true. If you, for example, ask yourself, how many, we all know about scientific revolutions, and we know that when you have a scientific revolution, suddenly thinking is turned upside down, and inevitably, whenever there's a scientific revolution, it leads to new technologies, which lead to new ways of looking at things and new possibilities, and that is not happening so much these days.
Right.
If you ask yourself,
right.
You know, there are plenty of technological revolutions, no doubt. You look at your iPhone and such,
sure.
It's clear. And that's based on old science. But if you ask yourself what fundamental scientific revolutions, I don't mean technological, but scientific revolutions, for example, like the splitting of the atom or the structure of DNA and such. Ask yourself, can I name three scientific breakthroughs, fundamental scientific breakthroughs of the same caliber as the two I mentioned that have already succeeded in changing the world the way those have? Can I name them that have, say, taken place in the past 30 years or something like that? I've asked that to many people, and they kind of look dumbfounded. What are you talking about?
Sure.
And have real difficulty coming back. There are one or two that have been cited, like, for example, the Higgs boson. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, how has the Higgs boson changed my life?
Sure.
You know, and the question is, how come there have been so few scientific breakthroughs recently? And in order to answer that, you have to go back to the system of the way science gets done. Science is kind of institutional now. The kind of independent scientists that existed 100 years ago, where the scientist is funded either by a wealthy relative or someone who really believes in what they do.
Sure.
I'm going to give you $1 million. Just go whatever you want. Do whatever you want. That doesn't happen very much anymore. So the funding comes from institutions. And so if all scientists think that the Earth is flat, if you just look out the window and you can see, well, it's obviously pretty flat, so it must be flat.
Right.
And you have evidence that the Earth is actually round, some evidence, and you want to get more money so you can study this more definitively because it's a really important topic.
Right.
So you go to you go to a foundation like the National Science Foundation or any of the others that fund fundamental science. It is shrinking, by the way, a lot of applied science, but not so much fundamental these days. And you put forth you construct an application and you submit it, and the gatekeeper at the whatever foundation is looks at your proposal. This is really revolutionary. We all know that the Earth is flat, and you, Ted Marr, you're suggesting that the Earth may be round. And I mean, I see the evidence that you're putting forth. You say that looking at satellite photos, it kind of looks round and not flat. And you tell me that you've taken off from Seattle and flown around the world and looked out the window conscientiously trying to find the edge of the flat Earth, and you failed, and you got all the way back to Seattle. So you're considering that this is evidence. Well, this looks pretty promising, pretty interesting, but I'm not sure. You know, Ted Marr, this guy, he might be a crackpot or something. So we're gonna I don't know about you, but I know I am. But, so we're gonna submit this to the most serious review possible. We're going to get the world's experts on the shape of the Earth to judge the merit of your proposal. And obviously, you know, the experts on the flat Earth don't want to be shoved aside because they're the premier people in the field, and you're challenging that, and they're supposed to make judgment on the quality of your challenge. Well, obviously, they're going to find something wrong with it because they don't want to be displaced from their premier position. So so the typical result is they'll say, oh, well, you know, this grant application, I don't know, it's got some defects to it. We probably shouldn't fund him and let him rewrite it and submit it again or whatever. And so you get turned down, and this happens to virtually every proposal that goes in that challenges the status quo, because the reviewers are the status quo that's being challenged. So it's like, you know, we're the two of us are driving on the interstate, you and me, and we have an accident, and you say it's my fault, and I say it's your fault, and so finally we can't agree, so we go to court, and we walk into the courtroom, and the judge is your brother-in-law.
Right.
So I'm not going to succeed, obviously. And this is similar to the case. The people who make the judgment are not disinterested parties. They don't want to be displaced, and therefore you're not going to get a good rating. So I'm sorry for belaboring this point.
Oh, that's okay.
You brought up. And so the chances are, if you come in with a round Earth proposal in a flat Earth scientific community, you're not going to make it. You won't. And so most scientists understand that this is the situation. And what they do is they keep to themselves about their creative ideas. You know, where creativity is still present, but there's a lot of fear. You know, if I put in an application that says the Earth is round, and all the people in the community know it's flat, I'm going to be in trouble. Well, you won't get your money, and you're labeled as a guy who's too far out. So your reputation is besmirched. Yeah. You won't get any money, and your lab closes down because you need money to keep it going, et cetera, et cetera. So,
I look at it too, Jerry, and everyone, Mitchie and Leon, that you look. I'm here in a skyscraper here from a beautiful. It's a beautiful studio overlooking. I can see the cascade of the Olympic Mountains, and it's a beautiful day. But you know, I look at. We're still driving. We're still using combustible combustion engine technology that's over 100 years now, with nothing new on the horizon. And it's not like new ideas haven't come out about transportation or even free energy. But a lot of people, forgive me for saying this, some of them have been murdered, some of them eliminated by the oil companies, and others with a vested interest in the status quo. So when you try to put in new ideas, no wonder good scientists are often disparaged or discouraged from continuing. I admire you, Jerry, for continuing your work.
As far as I know, I haven't been killed yet, as far as I know.
Oh, good. That's good.
Well, I hope not.
Yeah, I'm glad you're alive. I really am.
You know, so. Jerry, scientists like you are so important for the world. Mm-hmm. And
well,
people
you're very
like
kind,
you are.
So,
well, yeah. It's true. I mean, we the non-scientists cannot prove anything, but with the support of your background and scientists' background, we can support. We can prove that something that we cannot prove in the past can be proven now.
I'm with you totally, Mitsuko. And a good example of that is the role of water in health, which was supposed to be
good.
I'm just going to ask you. Yeah, because right now the belief system, you know, comparable to, you might say, to the flat Earth, the belief system is that the role of water is negligible. Role of water in our body—it's just water. It's H2O. It's nothing special, and it just—it's like what fills the bathtub, which bathes the more important molecules of life. It,
right.
That's all. It's background carrier, and it's astonishing because, for many reasons, because, you know, we all know that most of us are. Or like 2/3 water, approximately. It varies with age. But if you do the conversion from the percent volume, which is like 2/3, to the fraction of molecules. So in other words, if you line up all the molecules inside your body and count them one by one, more than 99% will be water molecules. And the reason is the water molecules are very small. To make up 2/3 of volume of your body, you got to stuff in a lot of water molecules. So we've got. We're mostly water, almost entirely water, and to me it has seemed arrogant for science to say that 99% of the molecules in our body do nothing, or essentially do nothing.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Right.
So that means we are the container of water.
We are. We're kind of
we are.
Yeah, and as Albert St. George, the father of modern biochemistry put it, water is the matrix of life. It holds everything together.
Yeah.
And I think he was right in so many things. And so the question then, if that's really true, then the question what it boils down to is, okay, if water plays some role, what role does it play? Because, you know, you have to understand that in order to understand how the body operates and what's good for health, you need to know the structure, and the structure is mostly water that's inside the body. So how does water play a role? And this is what we've been focusing on in the past several years. So I know some of you know we found a phase of water. Most of us we grow up understanding that there are three phases of water: a solid, liquid, and vapor. But we found a fourth phase, and it actually is not entirely new, because the fourth phase, an ordered phase where the molecules are kind of, regularly oriented, unlike liquid water in a glass where the molecules are bouncing around, randomly oriented a gazillion times per second. This is ordered like a crystal, and we found this phase of water, and we now have a lot of evidence that this phase exists, but the even more important than that is this is the phase that fills our body.
Amazing.
I mean, it's mostly not pure H2O, but actually it's this ordered phase of the water, which is generally negatively charged. So because the water is negatively charged, we're negatively charged, because we make up mostly cells, and even some of the tissues outside our cells are also negatively charged. So this water is pervasive. It's all over our body. And so maybe the right question that we need to ask is, okay, if this water fills our bodies, which I think the evidence by now is pretty clear, so what exactly is the role of this water, and how does it keep us healthy? And so that's where we are right now, and we obviously have done some work, and we have some points of view that are developed, and I can tell you. Go ahead, Ted. You wanted to say something.
Yeah. I think this is the perfect time. I've really packed in a full schedule today, Jerry. And just hold that thought for a minute, but I want to bring in Sharon Klein, who says she knows you, actually. She's from Grants Pass area, has a wonderful business there where she improves people's eyesight and people's health, too, with water. But I want to bring her on, Sharon, introduce you all to her. She's a wonderful lady, a very successful businesswoman, but a wonderful lady in the sense that she's open to new ideas and she uses water for health. And then I want you to go ahead and finish your thought, Jerry, because she spoke very highly of you when I spoke to her the other day. But
well,
anyway,
thank you.
Yeah, Sharon.
Hi, Sharon.
I'm on the phone listening to one of my favorite people.
Oh, good. Well, that's thank you so much for saying that about me, Sharon. Thank you.
Flattery will get you everywhere. Yeah. Yeah, Sharon and I have been having ongoing conversations about interesting stuff. okay, so you want me to continue, Ted?
Briefly, then I'll bring Sharon in. She's a wonderful lady. And anyway, I'm sure she would want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I can do the 2-minute version, the 5-minute version. Let me just briefly.
Five minutes, fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So our cells are filled with this stuff, and so what's the role? So step back a moment and think about how does a cell function? What does it do? Mm-hmm. As an example, let's take a muscle cell. So a muscle cell is filled with proteins and water, just mm-hmm. like mostly all the cells. Mm-hmm. Those are the main constituents. And when the muscle contracts, the proteins inside the muscle cell, in order to effect the contraction, they undergo some kind of folding. They go from one state to another state, and then as they do that causes the muscle to contract, and then it goes back to the original state when it relaxes. So the usual way that the cell functions is that each one of these proteins is surrounded by water, and the water is EZ water, mm-hmm. and we know that this EZ structured fourth phase, whatever you call it, water, it sits around every protein. It lines the protein because it sticks to the protein surfaces. You might say that the protein and the water are integrated together as a functional unit. And so if you were to remove the water, then the protein finds itself in a strange environment, and it's unable to undergo the folding that it normally does to create the contraction. So this contracting cell isn't contracting very well or it isn't functioning. It's pathological. And the same thing in a nerve cell or a secretory cell or any kind of cell, the proteins do the work. The proteins need to undergo a configurational change in order to do that work, and their usual environment is sitting in EZ water, which is actually part of the protein. So if they don't have the EZ water, you might say if the cell is dehydrated, because this is the hydration of the cell, it can't function. It's in a weird environment, can't do what it's supposed to do. So what you want to do, this is the central point, to reverse pathologies. One way, and I'm not saying it's the only way, is to restore the EZ water. So if in your body, if you build EZ water, if you have a method of building EZ water, it should restore function. It should make you healthy. It should make your cells work the way they're supposed to work instead of the way they're not working pretty well. And so we know of at least a half dozen simple ways to do that. And all of these ways have been known for millennia to be good for health, and we found in the laboratory that that all of these substances or all of these approaches build EZ water, mm-hmm. and therefore is possible with this new paradigm that one route to health is, well, you could call it rehydration. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that you need to be hydrated in order to be healthy, but specifically what this boils down to is the buildup of EZ water inside your cells and outside. This seems to be a necessary condition.
Wow.
And we know how to do it. So the obvious way is drink more water, because the water that you drink gets converted, much of it, not all of it, gets converted to EZ water. That's the first one. Another one, just to be brief, because I don't want to go on.
That's okay.
Briefly. Another one is a sauna. Why a sauna? Most of us have, or many of us have had the experience. I've had examples in Russia and Finland, the real saunas or banyas, as they're called in Russia. And you sit in one. It's hot, mm-hmm. and it's either moist or dry. But mm-hmm. heat is generating infrared light. Heat and infrared are pretty much the same. And we discovered that the most powerful builder of easy water is infrared light. We discovered that in the lab. So when you're sitting in a sauna sweating, you're receiving infrared energy throughout your body, and this infrared energy builds easy water. And if you have a headache, it means there's something dysfunctional in your head somewhere, and if you build easy water through the absorption of this infrared energy, it should reverse it. And that may be the reason why your headache is gone. You feel not fatigued, but fresh. Mm-hmm. Your muscle pains are gone, and whatever. So obviously, this has been known for a very long time, but we tend to forget. And I think a possible explanation for the positive effects of a sauna are exactly that, that build easy water.
Wow.
And then there's some more, but just let me mm-hmm. end with one. Certain substances that are known since Ayurvedic times mm-hmm. to be good for your health, like, mm-hmm. For example, turmeric, mm-hmm. Basil, mm-hmm. And a whole bunch of others. Mm-hmm. A question that arose to us is why these substances are so broadly effective. In other words, you take turmeric and curcumin is the main ingredient. And why does this seem to improve all the organs in your body? You know, are there 50 different receptors that this relates to or something? Or could it be that there's one mechanism and it applies in every cell in your body? So, of course, that's more attractive because it's simpler. And we tested 6 or 7, 8 by now, various agents that are known for centuries, if not millennia, to be good for health, mm-hmm. and every one of them we found that builds easy water. We tested them, and so I think this is another route to health. Many cultures have known this throughout time. But we tend to forget it, and we tend to assume, if it's not a pharmaceutical, something from the drug company, it can't work. But it does work, and it's been known to work, and we've discovered what we think is a simple mechanism to explain the efficacy. There are a whole bunch of these that we've been studying. And so it may be the bottom line, without going into much more detail, is that I think we've discovered a simple paradigm for health, and you might call it hydration, because everybody knows that you need to be hydrated to act properly. But what is the hydration? We found the hydration is actually the buildup of easy water. Every protein needs easy water around it, otherwise it's not going to function. And one route to function, proper function, is to build or rebuild this easy water. So it's a very simple paradigm. Even I can understand it.
Wow.
So anyway, that's in a capsule. That's where we're headed right now.
Wonderful.
Gary?
Well,
yeah.
Mitchie.
I want to
bring in Sharon real quick.
Okay.
Because she's been patiently waiting, and this is a perfect. And Jerry, please stay on. Sharon, thank you so much for patiently waiting, but you're the perfect person to have on now because you do research into how you can use water to improve eyesight and people's health. So I'd love to have you talk just real briefly about that, and then we'll ask you some questions.
Well, Dr. Pollack knows, I think, my background. Over 30 years ago, I was alarmed at stress and what was happening to terminal diagnosis that people would come under stress. Mm-hmm. And we found when I was president of the American Cancer Society on the State Board of Health and some other avenues that I was participating in, and my avenue was health education. And I thought I would study and see if I could get the terminal diagnosis to be more relaxing to the patient, but also to the people around the patient. And I fell into... After studying, because I study very deep, I go back into, and my way of studying, for all of you to know, is I study why did way back in time? Did they select that word to describe something? The invention of that word to describe it. So when I go back and I study, it's like algorithm. I knew what that meant way mm-hmm. back.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back as far as I can to discuss and to study the behavior of description of what they're trying to say. So I'll take no end of descriptions and see where they all agree with the right with the words they all agree. And then I go over to where they disagree, because everybody wants to be different, you know, especially when you're receiving grant money and certain money. You're studying some different directions, or you wouldn't be getting it, that kind of funding, because they want you to go some different avenues. So I see where they were disagreeing, and then I go in to see where they left out something and in what they were trying to describe. As I came along, rather than writing the book that I was going to write, and where I was so concerned is a lack of real education and common sense to what I had found out. And Dr. Pollack knows this. The world knows this. I own patents all over the world in description of evaporation and dry eye and water. How that happened is I decided that no one would understand if I wrote a book. There were a lot of words that have been misused to me. What has happened to me, for me to understand, for myself, is common sense is going to save lives mm-hmm. and find those cures and get away from the word remission. And mm-hmm. I found that when I was studying the human skin, mm-hmm. I really believed way back in time that the skin was the organ of the body that would be the sensory to understanding what evaporation is. I don't go to dehydration yet.
Mm-hmm.
Evaporating water through the body. And that would be very stressful. That would be and very sensory. And you, Ted, might understand this. A doctor, when I studied mm-hmm. other doctors out there, the ones that went after the sensory were the ones that I could see were picking up on what this is all about with evaporation, but they didn't say the word evaporation, really.
Mm-hmm.
So when I dove in and studied the skin, I thought to myself, Ted, mm-hmm. and Dr. Pollack and all of you, I decided, you know, for me to get this understood and not be complex again, all these fancy, these descriptions, I'm going to take a product mm-hmm. to the skin industry, high-end cosmetics. So what I did as I created an entrepreneur, Nature's Mist, Face of the Water.
Wow.
And I studied it so upside and down the other,
mm-hmm.
but as a technology, not as glamour, as a concern of the future of melanoma and stress of mm-hmm. the body. And I found that if I could get people to relax and understand the rhythm of their lives on the planet, and understand the moth and the origination of living with the water of the planet, but living with the water of the atmosphere and that rhythm. And it's like when I would go in, and I'll go a little faster at this so you can see where I went with the eyes. When I would go in, and strangely, and we're all talking about it because we're up to something in our company, our research center worldwide, I took it to the biggest department stores and high-end cosmetics mm-hmm. and got everyone I wanted and did personal appearances all over the country. The news media went crazy. And I was a guest speaker at Wall Street as the first water technology to be discussing water in the body, water on the planet, and water in the atmosphere, and bring them to what could be a technology of future for a more common sense understanding of what is happening with the word evaporation of water from the body, the atmosphere, and the planet. Mm-hmm. So when I got into it, they were just shocked that they thought I wanted to be the next Estee Lauder, or I would have been. And I became friends with mm-hmm. the heads of the founder, president of Revlon, the Lauder family, and the head of L'Oreal, and all of them. And I made it very clear, no, I want your water.
Sharon?
I think we've got a problem here with health on Earth.
Sure.
And we need to study the water, because I was so worried about melanoma.
Sure.
Well, once somebody saw a film of me with Public Broadcasting mm-hmm. System about my life and my story mm-hmm. and eye research, and they called me and said, you talk about evaporation of water about the skin, but can you study that for us but the eyes, because blindness is out of control because of over evaporation of the surface of the eye.
Wow. Interesting.
And the surface of the eye is 99% water, and I had never studied the eye.
Wow.
I was so into worried about melanoma.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I wore very expensive Dynasty originals, and I go out and do these personal appearances on national TV and guest speaker in magazines and so on, and fashions and so on, I have always, Dr. Pollack can tell you, everybody can tell you, I talk about water.
Did they?
And the forest and life on this planet.
Wow.
And the common sense.
Sure.
So I took it to them after studying Ted after a year and said, this is what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
The organ of the eye, and this is what it's all about. And I am, Dr. Pollack is brilliant. But I'm one of those people who have to use, I go into the common sense description.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this when I was with American Cancer Society and heading some certain very important life-saving spots. I said, don't discuss the words at the dot. When you go to medical school, you learn certain descriptions.
Right.
But I want us to describe to the public and to everyone the common sense side. And that's what I do. I go after what this is all about because I'm not that smart. I have to really study. But I want people on this planet to realize how serious water is.
Right.
And that's why Dr. Pollack is a hero. Everybody that goes out there and gets involved with the word water is a hero to the future of what's coming. And we're going to make it happen. But what I did with the eyes, they said, oh my gosh, you've got to get that product. I said, I'm so busy trying to show the world what's going to happen with melanoma.
Mm-hmm.
And I had learned that stress is a very serious evaporation to the body.
Wow.
So what I did is I said, well, let me look into it. And they were so kind to bring universities, ophthalmologists all over the country to help me if I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
So long story short, Ted, we decided, okay, we'll file for a patent in the first description of water evaporation and tear film of the eye that causes dry eye that is so serious. It's $100 billion a year out of control business.
Wow.
Out there, eyes. And let's see what we could do. And if I get your help in the United States, getting to the regulators, we would be the first to get a product called, and we called it Nature's Tears Eye Mist, 100% trade secret water, but it's tissue culture graded water.
Sharon?
And we put it in a container, very sterile controlled, and we were the first on the planet to sit in the drugstore department.
Oh, good.
We didn't go over to the health food side. I went to all the shows that we were invited to, and everything we did was in the it's in the medical field first time. It's not, we never talk about the words alternative. It's like on my radio show Monday, we had Dr. Effie Chow.
Oh, I know Effie. She's a great lady.
We were talking about water.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is we have been able to, with this evaporation of water out of the body, and this is where I come from with it. So the audience and yourselves and everybody can understand. This planet had a blue, I call it a blue ribbon around it, but a blue ring around it, filled with water. But it hadn't evaporated yet. It hadn't dripped yet. All of a sudden, living with this universe, with this rhythm, it began an evaporation and a drip. All of a sudden, when that rain, we call it rain, came down, and it came down for all those millions of years, all it filled into the earth, called aquifers, but then imagine a cave, filling it up at different spots, and when it would fill up, it'd come to the surface. And if it have a pond, a lake, a stream, a river, and going to the lowest point to what we call oceans. Water on Earth then began to put an atmosphere to the planet, but it all was evaporating. Here came life because of evaporation of water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the mother carries that baby in the womb, nature had a plan, like it did with Earth. The baby in that womb is nourishing to receive a percentage of water per organ before it's born. Once it's born, it comes out to the atmosphere, and that atmosphere begins to feed nature to that human life, all life, that what it needs to absorb. The organ of the eyelid, though, opens up, and that eye, excuse me, is exposed to the atmosphere without the skin covering it. Mm-hmm. It begins to evaporate every moment of day with that body, that skin, and when it's open. In the womb, the eyes and the brain are connected at the same breath. Why did nature do that? So the eyes become an influence of the atmospheric water absorbing into the eyes, because the eyes are evaporating water. Now, dry eye. You see it on TV all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Dry eye. Everything dry eye now, because we opened up where they can talk about it now. There's a product out there for the first time in history that can supplement the dry eye. Eye drops trap the moisture, but they don't supplement the moisture. It's a law. So what we're learning is that what happens with vision impairment is like when I've had the Mayo Clinic on my show and different scientists like Dr. Pollack and all, they teach me too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm listening to them have a view of where they're coming from, and we learn that the body is electrolytic. It's electrolytic.
Sure. Wow.
And that evaporation of the body is electrolytic. Now, when that baby is born, there are no two eyes alike, no two fingerprints alike. We all are that unique. But Dr. Pollack is right. All these people who study water are right about how serious this is. They're not going to find cures to diseases if we don't study the evaporation of the body and what's going on with the evaporation of the atmosphere.
I just learned something
drinking
today.
Water is vital.
Right.
And it's like Dr. Chow said on the show, she saved 4 people from heart attacks and strokes over the holidays. And the one thing that we need to learn that Dr. Pollack was describing there is the body will get tense if you don't have enough hydration.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That hydration is, the, is have you heard with Ebola? I got a few years ago, I got this email from somebody back in Africa said, Sharon, you're going to be so excited. That they found that if you drink a gallon of water a day, they could learn to slow down Ebola.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. There are stories, by the way, out of concentration camps in Hitler's Germany back
then. And you heard about the young boys in the cave when they survived with the water.
Right.
I had on my show a fighter pilot from the Navy, and he said, you're only allowed in the cockpit so much weight. He doesn't carry the gun. If he goes down, he wanted water.
Wow, amazing.
And so what Dr. Pollack is teaching everyone and what they've been studying, but this all began way back in time, as he can tell you. I got into the 1700s, the 1800s, but what happened in the 1800s, Ted, is scientists were being intimidated and bullied and embarrassed to study all that. Because it wouldn't go, they didn't think you could ever get a patent in it.
Sure.
And they didn't think that you could get enough intellectual property value to it to make the investment go further, protect it, and maybe make a lot of money.
Sharon, if you don't mind, I'd love to get Jerry's comment and then Michiko's and Leon's too, because you've said so many fascinating things, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm afraid I have an evening event that I need to dash off to. But, yeah, just all of this is, for me, really fascinating. And and I would just like to say that evaporation, we don't really understand, as Sharon was intimating, we don't really understand evaporation exactly.
No, they don't study it. Yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, it was, I think on your show, I was you matched me with a guy who dealt with weather, and I think there was a technical issue. It didn't pan out, but we were discussing. He was telling me. He said, "I hate to admit it," he said, "but the people who study climate and who study weather and such, there are two things that we don't understand, and one is cloud formation, and the other is evaporation."
Well, Dr. Pollack, can I interrupt? Yeah. He was from NASA for 40 years. He's a climatologist, water scientist, and for 40 years been a consultant all over the world. Since that origination, he went back and got them to start studying evaporation, and now they've got agriculture studying evaporation. They've got others studying evaporation because they hadn't thought about that enough.
Yeah.
And they now are taking it more serious. Yeah.
Well, I think we discovered something about evaporation that differs from the usual understanding is that you have some liquid molecules that gain somehow a measure of energy higher than the other molecules around them, and they pop from the liquid to the air. Well, we found something different. If you look at evaporation, for example, if you go to Starbucks and you have a hot coffee, and the lighting is just right, you can see the vapor rising. But the thing is, if you can see the vapor, it must mean that the components of the vapor have to be, this is generally known, larger than the wavelength of light. And the wavelength of light is about half a micrometer or something like this, typically. So it means that you have some kind of clusters of water that are evaporating. In other words, you wouldn't see it because like you don't see the air, for example, and a one or a half micron cluster of water may contain something like more than a billion molecules. So it's not one molecule at a time that's evaporating; it's actually a huge cluster that's
enormous.
Evaporating.
Enormous.
That's amazing.
Volume.
That's amazing.
It's just
yeah.
simple observation.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. That's amazing.
And so,
Dr. Pollack, we've had a company here in the United States that the biggest water company there is, and drinking, and the other one, they had a huge investment in the eyes. And they took it to their scientists, and they said, the scientists said, Sharon, keep it up, because we haven't studied evaporation.
Wow,
and Dr. Pollack, what they learned is the organ of the eye. That's why we got the patents approved all over the world, as we were the first to get that evaporation description in that patent with water and what is happening to dry eye.
Wow.
And the thing is what we've studied is that is what happened in the 1800s, is they were not allowed to continue studying it. They had to go into more of a complex medical IP values of protection. I'm an IP research center. We have an enormous amount of IP into water and water life science. But back to the organ of the eye and the rest of our body, it hasn't been studied enough.
Yeah,
but the Dr. Cecil, who was on there that day, Dwayne, Dr. Cecil is a 40-year scientist with NASA and NOAA and background all over the world studying, but they had not studied, you're right, the evaporation like they should.
Sharon, we're running close to the end of the hour. Quickly, I want to get in. Jerry, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, I need to take off. This has been fascinating.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jerry.
Okay,
You're a wonderful fellow. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
There's two important people on the line. We've got about 4 minutes left. I wanted to introduce you to briefly. Michiko Hayashi was the former administrative assistant to Dr. Moto, and Leon McLaughlin of the Clean Water Foundation. Michi, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi,
good.
Ted. Hi, Sharon.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, it's very nice to meet you here, and it's fascinating what you have done, what you have talked about water.
Dr. Moto, I didn't bring up Dr. Moto, but Dr. Moto was studying all that evaporation.
Yeah.
That's why
I
believed in those, you know, you put all these different glasses of water around certain types of environmental conditioning,
exactly,
and how each one evaporates based on the conditioning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
And actually, well, he passed away 4 years ago, but I carry on his work. And we as a team of my people in my laboratory, we're going to do the massive experiment between, I think we're changing from 4th of February to the 15th of March for 1 week, because the 22nd of March is the World Water Day. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do the massive prayer, blessing water experiment, sent to our water in our laboratory, and take water crystals and see before and after. So people can see how powerful our consciousness is. And
but
I was going to ask Dr. Pollack.
Can I interrupt and say something for a minute?
Uh-huh,
also,
sure.
Also, when you were on the show, I was taken by you. And you said that Dr. Moto came to you when you were at Dr. Pollack's house about time is running out.
It was, yes.
We have 1 minute left.
Okay,
and
well,
I,
at that
the
time,
world has to hear, we've got to put water priority on the planet Earth. It's got to be the priority of all life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, Dr. Emoto just said that we are water, but we have to know that water is us. This is really the important message that I just received.
The Earth can last for eternity if we study it and learn how to find those cures.
Sharon, we
if
got
we
20
don't
seconds
find those
left.
Cures, we won't
I want to introduce Leon. Leon, do you want to say hi quickly? I'm sorry, my friend, we're running out of time.
Oh, no problem. This was great, and we got to do another show. And like I said,
we
if anyone
will.
Would like to donate for our water project that we're doing, www.cleanwaterfoundation.org.
Hey, Sharon and Michiko and Leon and Jerry's left already, but thank you all so much, my friends, for coming on today. It was a beautiful show, and I really appreciate your wonderful work. Everyone, I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk next weekend. Bye-bye.